This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
Hello, this is Joel Hilliker, managing editor of the Philadelphia Trumpet News Magazine. On the show today, we're going to talk about the George Orwell novel 1984. Liberals are saying you need to read this book to get insight into the rule of President Donald J. Trump. Trumpet writer Dennis Leep has a report on why this book is a must-read to gain insight into the mindset of the liberal left. We'll also have an interview with registered holistic nutritionist Jorg Mardian about a fascinating subject, inflammation. Science is showing that chronic inflammation is a major cause for several major diseases, including diabetes, arthritis, cancer, heart disease, even Alzheimer's. We're going to talk about why and what to do about it. And I'll conclude the show with a follow-up to my last word from last week about how to raise our sons to become strong men. But first, a report about a prophetically important trend happening in Germany. This is a story about awakening to truth. It's easy to believe in something so strongly that you are certain it is true when in fact it is an illusion, a deceit. This happened to a German human rights activist, UN advisor, artist, and filmmaker named Rebecca Sommer. Her story gives insight into a crucial transformation taking place in Germany today. Like her nation's chancellor, Angela Merkel, Rebecca was very pro-immigration. This wasn't just a political view. She founded an organization to help immigrants. She did the dirty work of helping them, guiding them through bureaucracy to get them housing and furniture, clothing, jobs, education. She poured countless hours into championing their cause and supplying humanitarian help. But then something changed in her mind after New Year's Eve of 2015. That night in Cologne, a mob of around 1,000 migrants gathered outside the central train station and began molesting, robbing, and even raping passersby. Hundreds of crimes were reported to Cologne police, the majority being sexual offenses. A leaked police report stated that women literally had to run the gauntlet through the mass of drunk men in a way you can't describe. Similar incidents happened that night in other German cities.
That's when I said to myself, Rebecca, now is the time to pull the emergency brake, simply because as a women's rights advocate, you bear collective responsibility as a woman.
These were Rebecca's own words in a German language interview last month with a Polish journalist, Natalia von der Ostensacken. They are from the official English translation that the Refugee Supporting Network in Germany, of which Rebecca is president, called Working Group Flight Plus Human Rights, published on its website. Here is what Rebecca recalled about the Cologne incident.
Until then, I had tried somehow to justify to myself these constantly recurring attitudes and patterns of behavior shown by most refugees, their way of perceiving the world based on their religion, Islam, and their culture. For example, I would tell myself that they behaved that way just because they were newcomers. I thought that their medieval views would gradually change over time. But after looking back at years of recurring experiences of this kind in my work as a volunteer, I had to admit to myself that, as far as Muslim refugees go, they grew up with completely different values from ours, that ever since childhood they have been brainwashed and indoctrinated with Islam, and most of them have no intention of adopting our values. Worse, they look down on us unbelievers with disdain and contempt. I call it the headscarf inside their heads.
After the New Year's Eve crimes, the German government, which was deeply invested in a pro-immigration policy, tried to cover up what had happened. Fearing an anti-migrant backlash, for days, the police and the media were silent on the matter. But before long, the lie collapsed. It became public that the criminals were mostly asylum seekers from North African countries who were in Germany illegally. In the time since, similar reports of dangerous criminal conduct from Muslim migrants have regularly made news in Germany. The trend has brought severe criticism on Chancellor Merkel and contributed substantially to the election earthquake that occurred last September. Then Merkel's political party and other mainstream migrant-friendly parties received record low support, and the anti-immigrant Alternative for Deutschland party won its best ever election result. Last month, this party, which was once considered far-right fringe, took over as the second most popular political party in Germany. Listening to the formerly pro-migrant idealist Rebecca Summers helps you to see why. Not long after the New Year's incident, Rebecca had yet another disillusioning experience. There was a group of Muslim refugees in whom she'd invested substantial work to help, and they'd been very friendly to her, but one day she learned something that hurt her deeply. Their companionship was a deception. These migrants were willing to accept her charity with a smile, but behind her back, they were calling her a stupid German tart. She began to re-examine the individual cases she had worked on much more critically, and she saw widespread evidence that the migrants she assisted and trusted were treacherously taking advantage of her naivety. This is what she said about them.
Many still have no job, and many still speak only broken German. What's more, they keep to themselves. They have few German friends or none at all. Others even turned to crime or became radicalized. Or, for example, I find out later that they had been al-Nusra or ISIS fighters who still admire those organizations. Of course there are exceptions. People who have a job and speak proper German. But most of them keep the so-called headscarf in their heads. They're feeling superiority because they are Muslims, that excruciating contempt for us.
Rebecca says she can count on one hand the number of immigrants she's worked with who are, in my opinion, completely and successfully integrated, meaning that even if they have retained their own culture, they've accepted German culture rather than living in a separate, parallel Muslim society within Germany. She still wants to help those who genuinely need it, but she has determined she will no longer help Muslims who retain fundamental religious beliefs, such as the traditional Muslim abasement of women.
I am no longer willing to help Muslims who glorify patriarchal ideology. Now I understand how they think. Now I have become very cautious and extremely distrustful. I think that the ones who don't fit in with us should go to a Muslim country and seek asylum or employment and a better life there, instead of trying to impose their misogynistic medieval values on us, which in the long run will simply harm us all.
Once an outspoken defender of immigrant rights, Rebecca has become a frank critic of inhumane Muslim practices. One of these is the doctrine of taqiyya, which the migrants used to justify deceiving her, and they routinely employ in order to game Germany's immigration system.
Most Europeans are unfamiliar with the word taqiyya. People who try to warn you against this form of religiously justified dishonesty are routinely stigmatized as racist. Taqiyya means deceit. Taqiyya permits Muslims to be extremely devious toward us non-Muslims, if it helps protect Islam and Muslims. There is only one condition. A liar must firmly believe in the Quran and in Allah. Taqiyya even allows a Muslim to pretend that he's not a Muslim. He's allowed to say and do anything to deceive, as long as it helps, for example, in gaining somebody's trust, or the trust of a country. Now, think about what kind of religious ideology we are dealing with. Consequently, trusting German volunteers encounter a culture that they simply cannot grasp.
Rebecca has seen routine examples of immigrants lying about their educational background or skills or their love for Western values. They'll tell fictions about the poverty or the danger that their relatives face back home to convince officials to let them bring their family to Germany.
Suddenly, aunts, uncles, and parents show up in Germany. And suddenly, the whole deceased family numbers 15 people and owns 3 apartments. The younger brother arrives, and unlike what they told you, he's not defenseless at all, but was actually a fighter with al-Nusra in Syria.
Rebecca is speaking out on Muslim immigrants' toxic effect on refugee shelters, where they treat all non-Muslims as inferior. They regard all forms of charity as a sign of weakness, and they view all Western women as sluts.
The fact is, in this Islam-dominated culture, what counts is the law of the strongest. And if you help someone simply out of compassion, that doesn't jibe with their worldview. For them, that makes you a nincompoop, a weakling. And that is how they see us, as idiots, as a fallen society of weaklings.
Rebecca is also fiercely critical of the German government's refusal to acknowledge these realities. She says officials practice a false tolerance, excusing and permitting criminal behavior because, well, this is part of their culture. She says a parallel legal system has arisen, which is enabling drug trade, polygamy, sex slavery, rape, and other crimes.
Parallel laws have developed where our legal system does not reach anymore. It seems that everyone is afraid of them. Judges, lawyers, the police. The state has lost all the control. Above all, political Islam in Germany is trying hard, as they say, to get the foot in the door even deeper. Muslims are constantly trying to portray themselves as victims, complaining that they are being insulted and discriminated against, that the West is to blame for everything. This is a mistake and a wrong understanding of tolerance, born of the desire that no one should feel oppressed in Germany. But no one seems to realize that this is where our own values begin to be discriminated against, and we are discriminated against by Muslims. It makes me furious.
Indications are that many Germans are furious. Like Rebecca, they have come to acknowledge the illusion that accommodation with political Islam is possible. They now recognize the fundamentally antagonistic nature of a major Muslim contingent within their midst, and they are agitating for drastic measures to confront the problem. This month, Germany's new Minister of the Interior, Horst Seehofer, wrote an article in Bild saying Islam does not belong to Germany. Chancellor Merkel publicly contradicted him to try to pacify Muslims, but polls say 3/4 of Germans agree with Seehofer. Quite a few one-time believers like Rebecca Sommer are growing extremely intolerant in the face of reality. And their resolve portends a dramatic, even violent change that we are about to witness in the German government. Enmity between Catholic Europe and Islam, particularly Germany and Islam, is one of the most prophetically significant trends in the world today. The Bible foretells the emergence of a strong German leader to repel this threat to Germany. And it shows how he will confront the problem at its source by launching a spectacular blitzkrieg war. If you want more information about how the Cologne New Year's Eve crimes set these events in motion, Brad McDonald wrote an article about that in our March 2016 edition. It's called Germany, Migrants, and the Big Lie. And that points to the prophecies of this coming German strongman. And to see what the Bible says about the war against Islam that this man is going to direct, go to thetrumpet.com and read our free booklet, The King of the South.
Is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
There's a lot of renewed interest in George Orwell's masterful novel 1984. If you haven't read it, you should, according to this next report from Trumpet writer Dennis Leap.
Recently, I was chatting with an acquaintance I had not spoken with for a matter of months, and she asked me, why is this world getting so turned upside down? She was bothered by the Parkland, Florida shootings and the constant barrage of bad news coming from mainstream media. She exclaimed to me, it's never been this bad before. Now, I'm sure you feel the same way as all of us do. Why are things in the United States and the world getting so wacky? Who's to blame? Now, there is a way to understand it, and the reason may really surprise you, but there are many on the left, liberal, radical side. These are the thinkers that want you to believe the problem is Donald Trump, but that's a smokescreen. There really is something more nefarious behind the scenes with your nightly news. To truly get what's happening, you have to understand the liberal left's mindset. Just after Donald Trump was inaugurated, the New York Times printed a piece titled, Why 1984 is a 2017 Must-Read, and it's by Michiko Kakutani. Now, George Orwell's classic dystopian novel is nearly 70 years old, but it had just hit the Amazon's bestseller list that first week in 2017. Kakutani argued that it's because of the perceived dangers of totalitarianism under a President Trump, when actually it was the left's promotion of 1984 that made it a bestseller. In her article, Kakutani compared questionable administration accounts of the size of the inaugural crowds. I think all of us can remember this from the news. And she compared it to the Ministry of Truth's efforts in 1984 at reality control. Now, if you understand anything about 1984, 1984's Ministry of Truth is actually a department of lies. They want to control the citizens' minds and perception of reality by publishing false facts as news. Kakutani continues in her article, not surprisingly, 1984 has found a nervous readership in today's post-truth era. Now, we have to read between the lines there. What is Kakutani really saying? What she's really saying is, well, the previous 8 years were the truth era. And now that Donald Trump is in charge, well, now we're in the post-truth era. Personally, I agree that 1984 is a must-read. But it's not for what it tells you about President Trump. But it does reveal the mindset of our modern liberal left. Practices Kakutani accused right-wing demagogues of are actually far more common among left-leaning politicians and the left-supporting media. They're manipulating facts. They're redefining terms. They're rewriting history. They're bullying and they're using intimidation. In other words, they're making you think things are really wacky. Their basic solution to every problem, and you really need to think about this as you watch your news or you're reading your news, they want more government control. That's what they want. And what it's leading to is an authoritarianism in ways that America's founders specifically worked to prevent. And we have to we have to really see that and be aware of that. Now, if you really look at what's happening, the liberal left supports open immigration. They applaud sanctuary cities resisting the federal government's efforts to enforce immigration laws. They value the rights of illegal immigrants, even when it puts major strain on social welfare programs, it bankrupts communities, it's increasing criminality. Now, why would they do this? It's if they want authoritarianism, this is rebellion. It's revolt against laws that already exist. But why do they want to do this? even when they know it's hurting American families. There's victims of violent crimes committed by illegal aliens. Now, the reason they want this is power. More immigrants, more votes for them. That's what it means. It's all about staying in power. That's all that matters. Now, if you've read 1984, I know when I was in high school, that was on our reading list. Mostly everybody in the 60s and 70s has read it. One of the most chilling scenes in 1984 comes near the end of the book, when a high official from the Ministry of Truth named O'Brien is re-educating the book's protagonist, Winston Smith. And he's using horrendous torture. Now, the character Winston is kind of naive. He believed the party took control of the government because people can't govern themselves. But O'Brien sets him straight. After giving him this painful shock to punish him for his wrong idea, he states, and this is a quote from 1984, "The party seeks power entirely for its own sake. We are not interested in the good of others. We are interested solely in power. Not wealth or luxury or long life or happiness, only power, pure power. Power is not a means, it is an end." Now, all of you listeners need to understand, this is the thinking consistent with the actions on the left in America today. We cannot excuse it or overlook it. Now, let me just give you some examples. For example, let's look at climate change.
Climate change is recognized science by almost everybody. And all thinking people agree with this.
Because it's kind of like a religion for them, they use climate change to justify incredible expansion of government and power. Now, they've imposed incredibly economic crushing regulations. And also, remember how President Obama made major changes by executive orders far beyond any of his predecessors, taking powers not allowed by the U.S. Constitution. Here's what he said in his 2013 State of the Union address.
"I urge this Congress to get together, pursue a bipartisan, market-based solution to climate change, like the one John McCain and Joe Lieberman worked on together a few years ago. But if Congress won't act soon to protect future generations, I will. I will direct my cabinet to come up with executive actions we can take now and in the future to reduce pollution, prepare our communities for the consequences of climate change, and speed the transition to more sustainable sources of energy."
Now, think about that. He's using executive orders to get things done. And Mr. Gerald Fleury, in his booklet, America Under Attack, wrote, "People's minds are getting conditioned to executive orders which were primarily intended to circumvent Congress and the Constitution. That is the aim. This is quickly moving toward rule by a dictatorship or a tyranny." Now, when we think about it, and we should really think about it, and that's why most of us are a little confused, because we're not thinking deeply enough. But rule by executive order does destroy the Constitution's built-in protections against tyranny. Many left-leaning scholars and politicians believe the Constitution is outdated and must be discarded. I just saw in the New York Times today they're calling for the Second Amendment to be, to get rid of it. And really, they want to get rid of the Constitution. And essentially, the left is calling for a revolution against a system of government that paved the way for the U.S. to become a world superpower and the bastion of freedom. Many today, like Winston Smith, are naive about what's really taking place. That's why they're confused. That's why they don't understand what's going on. They don't see the nefarious things happening on the side of the left. Now, for law-abiding people, it makes no sense to get rid of the U.S. Constitution. But the radical left, with its socialist and even communistic ideals, sees things differently. And again, we just need to turn back to 1984 and listen to what O'Brien says. And really, this character speaks for our liberal left. He says in the book, this is again a quote, "We know that no one ever seizes power with the intention of relinquishing it." And so this is what's happening. And essentially, the liberal left media wants to control your mind, and they want to control your sense of reality. That's the truth. And also in this book, in 1984, I think George Orwell did an amazing job of capturing what a totalitarian government is like. Now, in that same torture scene that I just spoke about, O'Brien commands Winston, under the duress of pain, to say that 2 + 2 = 5. And Winston is baffled. He says, "How can I help but see what is in front of my eyes?" He asks desperately, 2 and 2 are 4. And notice what O'Brien says, "Sometimes, Winston, there are 5. Sometimes there are 3. Sometimes there are all of them at once. You must try harder. It is not easy to become sane." One thing we have to understand, the left is not content with civilized disagreement. They will force their radical agenda until everyone becomes a full supporter of and a true believer. Like Orwell's Big Brother, they want to control people's thoughts. And if they can control your thoughts, they can control your view of reality. That's just the way it is. Now, the left are calling for a revolution. And since losing the 2016 presidential election, their efforts to reclaim power are getting more and more radical. Their lawlessness is ever more obvious. That's what we're seeing. Here's another very chilling statement, the last one I'll give you, from 1984, and O'Brien makes this statement: "One does not establish a dictatorship in order to safeguard a revolution. One makes the revolution in order to establish the dictatorship." Now, Orwell had amazing vision, and he understood what can happen when the wrong people seize power. In any country plagued by rebellion and revolution, we just have to admit, is easy pickings for a dictator.
Well, thank you for that. That was that is very thought-provoking, very good to get our minds around that. I did want to mention, you covered 1984 on your program on Trumpet Radio, Just the Best Literature. You did several programs on that. Maybe you could just tell us a little bit about that.
I think we actually did 5 programs. So it's just like a book you can't get away from.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, you know, the thing is knowing that the left really promoted it. And to do it on Just the Best Literature, I thought we could give maybe just a really good perspective on it. And of course, we brought the 60-plus panel in. You know, my wife is a literature teacher. You know, Derry Hope is really, really well-versed in literature. And it had been a long time since I'd even looked at the book anyway. And we thought, well, why don't we just put this out there and really maybe explain what's going on with it? Mm-hmm. And so I think it came across, you know, very well. We got a lot of comments on it. And of course, it is a chilling book.
Yep.
But it does help explain what's happening in the world.
Yep.
And not just America. It's happening in Britain. It's happening in the little tiny nation of Israel as well.
Well, you know, the thing is, when you start to recognize, you look at the stories about the way that the left is implementing their agenda in so many cases, you see that those kinds of authoritarian type tactics. And when you look at 1984 and you look at history, you recognize just how often that's the case, that you have these folks who they decide they have their own utopian ideals of the way that they think society should run. And the only way to implement them is through authoritarianism. They have to crack down and force it to happen.
Right. If you know, the thing is, I know all of us are upset by the Parkland shootings. I mean, all of our hearts go out to the families and the, you know, even maybe husbands and wives of teachers that were killed and all that. But the point is, what I don't think people see is they're being manipulated,
yep,
by the liberal left to get what they want. You know, it's funny. They don't want the Second Amendment. They don't want guns. And so they think that's right. And so that's going to be the new law as far as they're concerned. And the thing is that that's really the problem with even working with liberal left people. I know just recently I've been working on some new projects, and I was trying to work with someone I would consider very liberal, very left in its thinking. And once he realized I worked for a conservative college, he didn't want to talk to me anymore. And we were in agreement on a lot of things, but he found out who I was. His mind shut down. He turned it. He said, "I'm sorry, I can't work with you on this." That's what we were saying is they will not. That they won't even have open disagreement. They won't even open their minds to consider that they could be wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's so dangerous.
Well, the other thing too is it's like, say when you talk about the Parkland shooting, the general sentiment seems to be that the ends justify the means. Once they have it in their mind that say this is the right thing to do, then anything goes in terms of what it would take to implement that. And that's essentially, when you take that way of thinking out far enough, you end up with Stalinist-type purges and the kind of extreme efforts to implement, say, that utopian ideal,
right,
that history shows, 1984 shows.
I think that some people that are in the liberal left thinking, they don't understand human nature enough. I think some of them are innocent left. Some, yep, of them are innocent thinking this really is the way to go. If we get rid of the guns, we're going to get rid of all the problems. But I don't think they see the O'Brien types at the top that know. Actually, and I made a comment to someone. I said, you can see these kids eventually are going to be picking up guns when they don't get their way. Because there's going to be a backlash from the conservatives to not take away guns. And guess what? They're going to be in a war. Yeah. You know, it's amazing, you know, how the left wants to use the dystopian 1984 to justify what they're doing. But really, if you look, I think with what Orwell was trying to do, it was directly opposite of what they want. He wanted to show what happens when totalitarianism takes control, mm-hmm, and it's going to get violent and it's going to get bad and it's going to, you know, cause people to really suffer economically, you know, mentally, socially.
Well, we've been talking with trumpet writer Dennis Leap. He's written an article that is going to appear in the print edition of the next Trumpet magazine, the May-June 2018 Trumpet magazine. The title of it is 1984 and the Liberal Left Mindset. You can watch for that. It'll be coming online on thetrumpet.com very soon. We sure appreciate your report.
Yeah, thanks for having me in.
This is Trumpet Hour with Joel Hilliker.
What do heart disease, diabetes, Alzheimer's, arthritis, and cancer have in common? Perhaps more than you think. Inflammation is the body's natural response to attack from viruses, bacteria, or injury. But sometimes the production of inflammation doesn't shut down when it should, and inflammation becomes the chronic engine that drives some of the most feared illnesses of old and middle age. To talk about this, we have from his office in British Columbia, registered holistic nutritionist Jörg Mardian. Hello, Jörg.
Hi there.
So tell us, what is inflammation exactly?
Well, inflammation is something that the body needs. There's actually two types of inflammation. So the acute type is the type that you get when, say, you get a paper cut or a splinter, and it's just the immune system effectively defending against anything that's foreign, say a bacteria or dirt getting into a wound. And so that's a good thing. The inflammation that's bad is called chronic inflammation, and it basically causes your immune system to attack your own body. So, you know, it may be something that we consider harmless, but the immune system just sets a scene of cascading events that threaten your physical health over the long term.
So what causes the body to begin to get into this chronic inflamed state?
Well, we in the field of nutrition, we always look at cause. Where does it originate? So we know now, and it's actually quite fascinating how many studies point to this. And we knew that for years, that it starts in the gut. It starts with the gut bacteria. And we call it the engine of the body. And we always said, you know, 80% of your immune system, it originates in healthy gut bacteria. So if you have an overgrowth of gut bad bacteria, say candida, it will overwhelm your bacterial balance. And it's quite neat to know that that's what you need for good health. So that's setting the stage and saying, okay, if we have a good balance, everything is, it goes all right in the body. If the balance is upset, then we're going to have trouble because we're working on what's called leaky gut. And so you have, say, a pathogen like candida that can penetrate the wall, actually, and it allows proteins and sugar and infectious microbes or any particles to escape into the bloodstream. And, you know, that's what we call leaky gut. And we see an explosion today of related diseases and symptoms that are, that go back, we can trace back to leaky gut now through multitudes of studies. Science is catching up to this now. And so there's very specific causes, of course, but if we're looking at origin, that's it there, the gut.
Now, I remember us talking about this a while back, about just how much the leaky gut affects hormones, and there are a cascade of other problems that tend to result from that. Maybe you could just talk about what happens when you have the leaky gut and how does that relate to the inflammation response?
Right. It's actually quite scary. When you put together, when you really understand what the body does. So your microbes actually communicate with your immune system. So if you have your gut bacteria is in good balance, it actually signals your immune system, hey, we're the good guys, you know, don't attack. An overgrowth of pathogens or a bacteria or anything that the body doesn't recognize gives the wrong signal, and then the body actually attacks. So the immune system attacks. So you have these inflammatory triggers, what they call, and they're cycled through the blood. So now your body says, you know, enemy, we've got an enemy here, and we're going to go on a warpath. So you're gonna have these triggers go over pancreatic tissue, and we're relating it to diabetes now. Mm-hmm. You're going to have it go into the joint tissue. What happens? We're going to get arthritis, you know, artery linings, heart disease. You know, it's crazy what we're looking at right now. It all originates from this cause, you know.
That's
and
remarkable.
Researchers also think that Alzheimer's might be a cause of that as well.
So all of these different diseases, even though they manifest themselves differently, they're just various expressions of the same root cause.
That's what the science is looking at now. I mean, I know orthodox medicine has always kind of looked at the gut as a mystery. And we in nutrition, in the holistic field, we look at it and say, no, it's not a mystery, because we know when we clean up the diet, these wonderful things happen. Hmm. I mean, I've seen people come back in 2 weeks from type 2 diabetes and put their counts right down. We know the gut has a lot to do with it. Science is catching up to that fact now with hard evidence, and I'm really excited about it, especially since you were talking about hormones. Let's talk about weight gain. Mm. We all think, well, it's just eating bad. That's the cause, right? But it's messing up the hormones. So how does it do that? Well, again, there's an escape through the leaky gut, and then we get all these disturbances in the body, and then we have weight gain, and so we say, well, what if we try to eat better? But it takes a long time now to correct the course. You know, it can be done, of course, but you have to understand how to do it.
It's quite remarkable just to look at what an intricate system our immune system is. And you're talking about how these these forces within the body that are intended to help us and to protect us from what could harm us. When they're unleashed against the wrong things, then they can really do a lot of damage just because of the wrong signals that are being sent.
You know, I always tell my clients, it takes a lot to mess up your body. It takes years. Mm-hmm. But what will you do?
Yeah.
Because it's not an easy escape. Now you have no choice but to walk a very straight, narrow path to get that body back into balance. It's a very intricate machine. Like you said, there's a balance there. Once we tip that balance, and a lot of that balance hangs in the engine room, the gut, just like an engine room in a ship. If something goes wrong in that engine room, that huge ship is going to have trouble. Well, that's ours now. So that's the starting course. And then everything goes just in a cascading wave from there on. And we have to stop that then. We have to go back to the cause and say, let's correct what's causing it to do that. And, you know, cause of leaky gut and how to reduce inflammation is a little bit of a science itself, but it's, you don't have to be steeped in nutrition. You just have to understand how to do it.
Well, let's get into it, because as you said earlier, the way that you approach this, you're looking at cause and you're looking at specific things that you can do. These aren't mysterious forces that are outside of our control. Really, so much of it is controlled by what we put in our mouths. Certainly, that's the way that you're viewing it, and presumably achieving quite a bit of success if you're talking about someone reversing diabetes within a couple of weeks with a change of diet. Maybe you could just get into how we correct this, or how we reduce or eliminate the threat of chronic inflammation that causes so many of these other problems.
Right. And, you know, when we look at, we've had different talks over the past, and we always seem to hit those same basic causes, don't mm-hmm. we? Sometimes up to 80% of our symptoms can go away with dietary changes alone. And that's how important it is to look at the quality of our food supply. Mm-hmm. So there's a long and varied list of offending substances, but if you want to really cut them down for the leaky gut, you can look at sugars or refined starches as one. Very, very big cause. Unhealthy fats, which are hidden in everything today. I mean, absolutely everywhere. And toxins. And so toxins, I would put genetically modified materials, you know, even unhealthy air or bacteria in something that we're ingesting. And so a lot of the food that we have, it's lacking that fiber. Fiber really feeds bacteria. It's food for bacteria. And then we don't have the minerals. We don't have the beneficial fats that we need. And those foods have actually lost their anti-inflammatory status. So the body doesn't recognize them. They have a profile normally when they go in, and the body recognizes that. These are foreign entities. And they don't have the alkalinity that they need. And so when they interact with our gut flora, rather than helping us, they contribute to disease.
You're talking about, say, vegetables or fruits or food substances that they should be helpful to us, but because of genetic modifications, they're sending the wrong signals?
Genetic modifications, refinement. One of the ways to look at it is refined starches. Even whole wheat starches, they actually take those apart now and then put them back together. And we actually believe that they're not putting back those healthy fats in the proper amounts anymore. Hmm. They're also made very quickly today in the industrial setting. They're not made the long process anymore. That makes them inflammatory. Not like the old days when you would make, say, you could culture that yeast and ferment it for days or maybe a week on end. So today you have these yeast cultures that are just, it's just a hybrid of what we used to have, very high in gluten and very highly inflammatory to the body, more so than previous varieties.
Okay, so just getting into some specifics here, there you were just talking about, say, the difference between like whole wheat bread that you may buy from the store and sourdough bread. I don't know if there are commercial varieties of sourdough bread that would be healthful, or if it's something that we'd be best to just do by creating your own starter at home, or, you know, getting one from your grandma or something like that. Can you get into some specifics?
Well, sure. Now, there are bakeries that actually do very good in the long process of baking. They recognize the gluten intolerances. If you can find one, fantastic. Not everybody has time to bake. You know, right. I recognize that. We actually have a bakery where we are, and she says that all the people who have gluten intolerance, they do not suffer from the way she does it. Mm. So they're very good at it. There's also a bread that you can buy commercially. It's called Ezekiel 4:9. Mm-hmm. They go according to the biblical principle, and it's actually a where it's has a lot of the alkalinity and the old process still. It costs maybe a dollar more a loaf, and it has all the nutrients that you need. I've tried it actually. It's very nice bread. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good commercial bread where you have something where it's, you know, you have that fermentation process and the body recognizes that. We don't want to put stuff into our body that is foreign to it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just going to cause harm, right? So, and the other thing is, that's one part of it, of course, but we're also looking at fats. If you're eating any foods out of a can or a box, then you're going to have hydrogenated, partially hydrogenated trans fats, vegetable oils. They're all inflammatory. You know, you can have toxins from heavy metals, skincare products, shampoos. They all have stuff in them, if we're not careful, that really absorb through the skin that act as a toxin, mold, air and water pollution. I mean, I can really go on, and it can seem like, wow, that's a heavy burden on us. And it is. We have to be careful. We have to look at what we do and say, is this healthy for me? You know, not just foods, but what we touch, what we interact with. And just take some more care to really look at what goes into our body and around our body.
It seems like, as you mentioned, so many of the discussions that we've had, we kind of return to some of these same basic principles. And it seems like, well, at least until you got into some of the shampoos and avoiding molds and so on, that you were getting back to that basic principle of trying to limit your exposure to the heavily processed foods, that the simpler, more whole foods that you can have, the better off you're going to be. Is that a good summation of what you're advocating?
That is exactly it. Most people think that's a very simplistic way to look at it. So if you can buy local, and you can buy local, and you know that farm, if you can even visit a farm, which is every area. I've lived, even when I was in heavily populated areas living there, you can always find a farmer. Do you spray? Do you do this? Do you take care of your crops? You can find those places. Yes, it takes you an hour or two more a week, but you can get whole foods, local foods that aren't from overseas and just, you know, manipulated 10 ways to Sunday. And then you can get foods that are actually not loaded with pesticides. Take a little bit more care local and make sure they're not processed. Yes, that is correct.
Well, we've been talking about inflammation and its problems with registered holistic nutritionist Jorg Mardian. He's working on an article on the subject. You can watch for that on thetrumpet.com. Jorg, thanks again very much. It's always enlightening to talk with you.
Thank you.
It's time for today's last word.
What does God want our sons to become? Society isn't teaching them. It's very ambivalent about, even hostile toward masculinity. It's up to us as parents to prepare our sons to fulfill the role for which God created them. To help your son fulfill that role, teach him to do things. Don't let him stand awkwardly by as his friends dive into experiences like jumping in the pool or riding horses. Don't let him sit on the sidelines during an activity. Get him a dog and show him how to train it. Teach him how to use things, to make things, to plant things, to manipulate his environment in a proactive, positive way. Look at Genesis 2, and you see God began the creation of human beings with the man and immediately gave him work to do. God gave him physical things to teach him good stewardship, taking care of the blessings we receive. After Adam sinned, God actually made his workload harder. You can see that in Genesis 3, because physical labor is crucial to building character. God knows that when everything is handed to us, we just don't do well. He wants man to earn his bread through the sweat of his brow. And the Bible is clear in its command to men that they provide for their families. You can see that in 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8. Parents, teach your boy how to work. The lessons Adam learned by having to dress and keep the garden are lessons that all boys need to appreciate the value in hard work, to be patient and wait for fruits to show, to have realistic expectations of success, to enjoy labor. A boy needs to experience getting worn out and having to push himself when he feels like quitting. Give him chores. Boys tend to be lazy. It's a parent's duty to help them overcome that tendency. Eventually, your son will need to get and hold a job outside the home. He needs a steady progression of duties and opportunities that teach him to work, to be responsible, to be self-motivated. When your son understands the value of hard work, he'll know the value of an honest day's pay. That provides another invaluable opportunity, guiding him on how to save, to pay his own way, to spend wisely, to be generous to others, to give back to God. These are crucial habits for a man. Instill them when he's a boy. The Genesis account also reveals that Adam was not meant to be alone. He needed a companion, a helper. He was incomplete without Eve, and she was incomplete without him. To ensure order and organization, God placed the man in a leadership role over the woman. We need to remember this as we work with our sons. This starts with the relationship between dad and mom. Our sons need a strong example of a godly marriage. They need to see proper masculine leadership in action, a man who leads his family in love. A boy is going to be drawn to emulate his father's strong, manly example. A father must ensure that his son treats his mother with respect. God commands a son to honor and obey his mother. That's the fifth commandment. When a boy learns this, he begins to develop a sense of responsibility and duty toward women. This makes it more natural to later step into the responsibility of leading, protecting, and providing for a family of his own. Proverbs 15:20 says, "A man who despises his mother is a fool." If he has a confrontational relationship with his mother, he learns to be more competitive and combative around women. But a boy who honors his mom will grow up to honor his wife. In preparing your son to fulfill his role, pay attention to how you discipline him. Don't browbeat him or put him down. Don't instill cowering submission in him. Instill godly confidence in him and godly humility. How do you do that? With lots of encouragement. Encourage his strengths. Praise his successes. Show joy in his accomplishments. Train your son to accept responsibility for himself. Teach him to own up to his actions and not make excuses. Don't let him shift responsibility or blame and flee the burdens of leadership. Being a leader requires making difficult, unpopular decisions. We all tend to be people pleasers. Your son needs people skills, but he also needs the courage to stand alone. Teach him to obey God's definition of right and wrong and to stand against the crowd when he has to. This requires courage, and you have to instill that in him. Help him to overcome self-centeredness. Encourage him to seize opportunities to do things that benefit others at the cost of benefiting himself. Teach him the sensitivity and magnanimity to identify others' needs. Help him to see the big picture. Show him how to see things from God's perspective. Build his physical and mental strength. If you can, teach him how to change a tire, how to fix the car, how to do home repairs. Help him learn to thrive outdoors, to camp, to hunt, to fish. Most importantly, spend time with him. The father who shows his son how to change the oil gives him a skill, but the more valuable thing is that he's with the boy. Society faces a crisis in manhood. Do everything you can to address the problem in your own home by teaching your own son to become a godly man. I'm Joel Hilliker, and we're coming to the end of Trumpet Hour. Send us your comments on the program by emailing letters@thetrumpet.com. Thanks to my guests on the program today, Aubrey Mercado, Dennis Leap, and Jorg Mardian. Thanks to our staff, Dwight Falk and Josh Sloan. I'll leave you with this thought from Winston Churchill. For a nation to try to tax itself into prosperity is like a man standing in a bucket and trying to lift himself up by the handle. Thank you for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Until next time, keep watching your world.
You've been listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG. And online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.